It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. With midterm elections around the corner, voters are prioritizing issues that will inform their decisions at the polls. For many people in the Ohio Valley, pensions are a critical issue.
I vote in my world on this pension. And you know, that's just the way it is. And nothing, there's no other factors for me. I got to take care of my family.
We'll hear more about it in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Governor Jim Justice says he is in planning to call the legislature back into session to address pending impeachment trials after a temporary bench of the West Virginia Supreme Court halted the trials from moving forward. Dave Mistich has more.
Governor Justice was asked about the standstill in the impeachment trials at a Monday morning news conference. He says it would be, quote, horribly unfair to intervene before the House and Senate attempt to address the situation on their own.
Those people need to speak and those people need to find direction without me imposing my wishes on them.
In August, the House of Delegates adopted articles of impeachment against four justices of the state's high court. Justice Beth Walker was tried and acquitted in the Senate before an opinion from the ad hoc Supreme Court blocked the trial of Chief Justice Margaret Workman. The ruling also throws into question the trials of retired Justice Robin Davis and suspended Justice Alan Laufrey. The Senate says they plan to ask the court to reconsider their opinion so that the trials can take place. Laufrey was convicted earlier this month on 11 counts of federal charges, including fraud, witness tampering, and making false statements. He has yet to resign from the bench. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown.
The city of Danville, Kentucky has fought for years to block a controversial project by one of the country's largest owners of oil and gas pipelines. The Tennessee Gas Pipeline travels through 18 Kentucky counties, stretching from the Ohio state border in the northeast to the Tennessee border in the south. In Danville, the pipeline runs through an elementary school, a main thoroughfare, and the city's water supply. Residents were concerned when plans were announced to reverse the flow of the line and send a hazardous mix of natural gas byproduct through it. Kentucky Conservation Committee Executive Director Lane Boldman says the pipeline was not designed to handle natural gas liquids.
Reversing the flow of natural gas liquids that are much more volatile, you know, you shouldn't be using communities as guinea pigs.
Last week, plans to scrap the project were announced. The pipeline will instead continue to provide natural gas service. Company leadership told investors the company wasn't seeing enough customers sign up for the new service. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:46. Mostly sunny skies today with highs in the 50s and 60s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 30s. Partly sunny Wednesday with highs in the 40s and 50s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Possum Creek Retreat, providing cabins in the woods next to the New River National Park and Fayetteville, West Virginia. OPOSSUMCreek.com. A West Virginia journalist recently received a MacArthur Fellowship, a prestigious award that comes with a stipend of $625,000. Investigative reporter Ken Ward Jr. was one of only 25 people named for the awards that's often called the Genius Award. The website said Ward was recognized for his work that reveals, quote, the human environmental toll of natural resource extraction in West Virginia. Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly spoke with Ward about his work.
What does it mean to you?
Oh, wow. I mean, when I first heard about it, you know, this is a big thing with MacArthur Foundation. They like this. They're very big on this secrecy. So I had I didn't know. You don't apply for this. You don't interview for it. Nobody, you know, it's it's just you get this phone call. And so I was pretty floored, and I'm still a little kind of I said to them on the phone, so I want to make sure I understand, this isn't something I'm like a finalist for, and you're going to call me back in a few weeks and kind of let me down easy. And gosh, it was nice to be considered. And they're like, no. And I woke up at 3 a.m. that night, and it was one of those things where you wake up and you're wondering if something was a dream, mm-hmm. you know, and usually that happens like, you know, it's something bad, mm-hmm. but I woke up 3 a.m. and I was like, wait a second, did this really happen? And I literally like kind of rolled over and grabbed my phone and was looking through. I wanted to go back through and see this email that I'd gotten from him. So I made sure that I wasn't just kind of imagining the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's really been something to hear the way people have been touched by the work we do.
What report did you do that was the most memorable, that, or maybe that you're the most proud of, or that you worked the hardest on? Just something that always sticks out to you that you want to share with people when you talk about your work.
Gosh, it's 27 years. It's hard to name just one, but the two things that really stick out for me. One was a project we did at the 25th anniversary of the Buffalo Creek disaster. Mm-hmm. That was oral histories with a bunch of different people who had lived through that. One of the people we did an oral history of was Jack Spadaro, the kind of legendary mine inspector and who had investigated Buffalo Creek. Another one was Nelson Sora, who was a Gazette reporter at the time of Buffalo Creek, and along with our photographer Larry Pierce, they were the first reporters back into Buffalo Creek Hollow to see what had happened. And Nelson spent, I don't know, a week or something there reporting. And then when he got back to Charleston, he had gotten called up for guard duty to go look for bodies. Mm. And, you know, Nelson was my first city editor at the Gazette, you know, and I spent who knows how much time with Larry Pierce out doing things. So, you know, they've both passed away since. But that story was, to me, was that project was really powerful because it had all of these oral histories of lots of different kinds of people. And John A. Williams, the great historian, talks about how West Virginia's past is so poorly misunderstood because it's so painful. But to me, I think understanding that painful history is just absolutely critical so that we can learn from those mistakes. So I was really proud of that project. And the other thing that I was very proud of, the newspaper's coverage of Upper Big Branch and the mine disaster and following the criminal case through to Don Blankenship's trial. And to get to sit in that courtroom and watch, you know, a dozen coal miners who survived that explosion testifying about the conditions they had to work under to feed their families. That sort of moment in history had never happened in West Virginia before. Mm-hmm. And I just felt a tremendous honor to get to be there and cover that. And there was this moment afterward when they went to Richmond when Blankenship was appealing the case. And I walked into the courtroom, and a couple of the family members, a couple of the ladies, kind of looked over their shoulder and saw that I had come in. And they said, oh, there's Ken. We knew the Gazette and Ken would be here. They've always been here for us. And that's just a really powerful moment when somebody, you know, says that. I've seen people do that with you. And when somebody who's been through what they've been through, you know, says you've always been here for us, you know, that if that doesn't move you a little bit as a journalist, I don't know, you need to get into some other business.
That was Charleston Gazette Mail investigative reporter Ken Ward speaking with Jessica Lilly about his journalism work. Ward was recently named one of only 25 recipients of the MacArthur Fellowship, also known as the Genius Award. Ward says he's still pondering ways to spend the money, but a college fund for his son and a new vehicle seem to be a good place to start. In the months before midterm elections, thousands of Ohio Valley workers and retirees have rallied over an often overlooked issue, pensions. There are serious questions about whether pension funds for miners, Teamsters, teachers, and others will remain solvent. As labor leaders look to Congress for action, those questions are coming up in the region's midterm campaigns. Becca Schimmel explores whether concern about pensions will show up at the polling place.
Union miners and retirees rallied in Columbus, Ohio this summer as the United Mine Workers pressed lawmakers for action to protect pension benefits. Coal miners are among the unions with multi-employer pension plans at risk of insolvency. The miners have also taken to Capitol Hill for lobbying and rallies. Larry Miller mined coal for 20 years before retiring and says pension security is his top voting issue.
I vote in my world on this pension. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And nothing, there's no other factors for me. I got to take care of my family.
Miller says without those pensions, many widows and retirees won't be able to get by, and that'll pull money out of small coal community economies. Phil Smith is the spokesperson for the United Mine Workers.
We've made it very clear to our members, and our members are making it very clear to their elected officials that this is an issue that they are voting on. This is issue number one. This is life and death for them.
Pensions for some 43,000 retired coal miners in the Ohio Valley alone could be at risk. And it's not just miners. Teamsters, bakery and confectionery workers, and iron workers are all worried about the security of their pensions. Uncertainty about pensions played a big part in the teacher strikes in West Virginia and Kentucky. And union leaders pledged to make pensions an issue when voters head to the polls in a few weeks. The issue could play a role in two competitive Senate races where Democrats Joe Manchin in West Virginia and Sherrod Brown of Ohio are seeking re-election in historically union states that went for President Trump in 2016. Brown faced off with Republican Congressman Jim Renacci in Cleveland for their first debate earlier this month, where Renacci questioned the senator's commitment to coal miners.
My grandfather was a proud coal miner. And if my grandfather was alive today, you know what he would say? Senator Brown, you don't support me. You don't support me as a coal miner.
Brown co-chairs a committee tasked with shoring up multi-employer pension plans and has proposed legislation on the matter. At the debate, he defended his track record of helping miners, saying he helped secure their health benefits.
Senator Manchin, West Virginia, and I led the charge to do that. I then, right now, am the co-chair with Senator Hatch, a very conservative Republican from Utah, to restore the pensions for 60,000 workers in Ohio.
The closely watched special election in western Pennsylvania in April could be an indicator of how pensions are motivating voters in the region. Democrat Connor Lamb narrowly won a Republican-controlled House seat, largely due to labor support and his pledge to support pension security. Like Pennsylvania, the Ohio Valley still has a high percentage of union households where labor issues resonate.
Somebody who's going to fight for pensions, fight for, you know, retirement security, you know, those type of candidates are going to appeal greatly to these union voters.
That's Pennsylvania Democratic consultant Mike Mikus. He says the candidates fighting for retirement security are going to appeal to the Democratic voters who went for Trump.
There have been a lot of union but our union Democrats gravitate to the Republican Party. And I think if a Democratic candidate puts that issue front and center, I think they can overperform what Democrats have gotten in some of those tougher-to-win places.
Fix it! Fix it! Fix it! Fix it! When the people get to marching, the politicians get to listening!
UMW President Cecil Roberts told the crowd their concerns about pensions can make a difference if they take them to the ballot box. The results on November 6th could show if Roberts is right about that. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.